How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm so happy to finally get to speak with you again. The last time we got to sit down and talk about a film was for The 100-Foot Journey.
Oh my God. Fantastic. When? 14, maybe 2014, like 10 years
Yes.
ago. Yeah.
It's been way too long.
Oh, yeah.
I think 100-Foot Journey, that was the, I think you shot that digitally for the first time, didn't you?
No, we shot on film, but we shot also digital. We shot the Paris sequence digitally, and we shot the majority of the film was on 35 anamorphic. It was a piece that was digital because we wanted the world to get more sort of sterile or more cleaner because he went to a molecular sort of restaurant to work and
Yes.
disappeared from the human life with his family.
Because I remember, yeah, digital was involved in our conversation. So you are a diehard film lover as a cinematographer, and I know that. And I have to tell you, Linus, what you have done with Saltburn, you mesmerized me. The visuals are stunning. The richness and the texture that you give this with your lighting and your lensing, and the way you use color and celebrate it is stunning. Absolutely stunning.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to say, and that you appreciate it, because obviously the idea, more so maybe with this film than with other films, it's always like a matter of trying to connect the emotional story with the audience through a visual storytelling, obviously. But in this case, we also wanted to, or Emerald really wanted it to feel more lush and more sort of evocative, just because some of it is juxtaposed, that would juxtapose sort of certain things that goes on in the film that it's hard to watch. It would be like the best marriage of beauty and ugliness for her was to, well, if we can see this and feel disgusted, but at the same time love the image, or love it for whatever reason, but partly the image, then that's sort of the best way to tell the story, she felt. So that was sort of the approach to kind of, I felt like it was a great inspiration to think of sort of thematically, was sort of the gothic, no, sorry, the sort of what do you call them, the Baroque painters like Caravaggio and these guys, but also in how they had a love for kind of painting things sometimes that were disgusting, like they're killing someone and
Yes.
then beautiful light, you know, or it's just an amazing composition and you can't stop watching that painting even though it's really gross what's going on. And it's sort of in the vein of that, I think we had our mindset, you know.
Well, you definitely pull it off. And one of the standout things is the visual storytelling and the contrast that we have. Everything in this film is about the contrast of light and dark. And when we first meet Jacob, when we first meet Felix and Oliver at the university, it's very claustrophobic. It's kind of bland. You've got the blues, the grays, the sandstone colors happening. The rooms are small, even the cafeteria is small, the pub is small. When we get to Saltburn and Felix's family, it's huge, it's massive, but there's still a sense of claustrophobia within the house because of the construct, but also because of the composition. All of these images within the house, when you get the Caton family together, it is if they are posing for a portrait. And I found that so interesting. You could have taken the imagery of them positioned in the living room and just put that, substituted them in a painting, a 300-year-old painting that was already on the wall.
Oh,
Very
really?
interesting with the differential and how you played with light and framing to capture that.
Right, because that was I came from that a little bit in our early discussions. I was like, wouldn't it be cool to, with the history of the house, they're just living in the house, just like their ancestors lived for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they all are on the walls now. If the way we can portrait these families by a film camera, but we could still portrait them in the same way, like in the same type of compositions. They're just living in the house like their ancestors, and the next generation will as well, and the house will always be the survivor in all this. And so that was one part of it, and the other was sort of coming from sort of the kind of vampire theme we thought of, but also like other things, like for the exteriors and the summer days, we thought more of, you know, something like hot, like Polaroid fashion type of photography, almost mm-hmm. to make young kids have a great time. And there's something foreboding and bad that will happen by showing the house interiors more dark and the outside is like really bright, but it's again like the contrast between the main theme and inspiration, the main inspiration for the lighting, where we can control lighting, was more about that, like the actual, like you said, like the interiors where we could decide to have light come through windows, and then the rest of the room would just fall out into darkness, and who knows if someone stands and peeks and looks at you from somewhere in the dark corner. And it kind of feels claustrophobic, I think, because of that too, where you don't, you know, the house is huge, but and you see a big room, but still there's space around that is just dark, and you don't know what's going on there. I guess
there's a lot of negative space happening in this house, Linus.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it. And, you know, those dark cherry woods or mahogany wood tones of the walls, I mean, they're beautiful. The luster is gorgeous. The
house was gorgeous, for sure, yeah, in general. And then we just had to help the sun by shooting in lights, you know, through the windows. So that was the idea, was to just augment the sunlight and have atmosphere in there, too.
Well, when we get into the third act, after things have happened to the Caton family, and we have Oliver running rampant in the house, the almighty naked shot that everybody will always be talking about, the lighting is so stunning, what you have done, because it is really, we now have lighter drapes that are there, the drapes are drawn, but they're almost like a butter yellow with sun coming behind them that are creating almost a sunrise effect with the lighter tiled wood floors or parquet floors as he's running naked with this great freedom. The metaphor of those visuals that you have created is just stunning.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was a great scene, because it's also like showcasing the whole house without cutting, right? Like not the whole house even, but like a big part of the house without cutting. And obviously the tones of the house too, the colors of the walls and stuff in that part of the house was all authentic and very old. Like the room we start in, like when he steps out of the bed and the music starts,
mm-hmm.
that's the king's room, right? That's like where that family always intended to, if the king came by for whatever reason, he would live in that room, and he never probably lived there, because I don't think they had visitors like that, but they had it in case he came, right? So that was a very special room, and he obviously wanted to, that's where he sleeps now, Oliver, and because he's the king of the castle. And but all those sort of, that I love the wallpapers, and the floors, like you said, and the wood. It was a really beautiful house, and we just had to, you know, help it with light and put the light in the positions that didn't light up the whole house. You know, it just was good to keep a lot of shade in there, too, as he goes through it, right?
But mm-hmm.
It was also like you wanted to see the house in that whole shot.
Yes!
Part of it. Like, part of it. It's not like a shot of its face and he's the person. It's like he's part of the house. So we kept a little distance there to him too, and just lingered behind him, watching him
What kind of lighting packages did you bring in to augment the natural light through those very tall, high windows?
Yeah, we had, that's actually a classic Lina Sandgren thing, is that I know that when I look at the budget, it's always too few condors, and I feel like sometimes condors or cherry pickers are more important than the actual lamps, you know, in the budget, because you needed to come from a specific height to mm-hmm. make it look real. So we needed tall condors around the house, and because of them, so that was number one, to make sure that we could, you know, do that. And then because the house was sensitive for, you know, machines and stuff, and there was no sort of roads around the house, really. We had to drive on the lawns and put out, you know, protection. And so we rather parked different types of cherry pickers or man lifts or something that was allowed around the house. And on some instances, we could have proper condors, like 80-footers. Around, so, and they were sitting there throughout our shoot. We didn't like move them. We had them throughout the whole shoot, and we didn't move them from side to side, but rather had more of them so that we didn't need to move them for protecting the surface. But that also gave us the ability to go back and forth between scenes,
mm-hmm.
You know, in within the house, by having that and the lamps already set up. So the general lamp package was, the biggest windows had 18K Aramax 18Ks. So there were three on the front of the house, and we could pan them across between the biggest room down where he enters and the dining room that gets the red lights
mm-hmm.
and red window. Like when they close the curtains, it becomes red.
Right.
Those two were sort of connected on one side, and so they shared three cherry pickers with three 18K Aramax. And on the other side of the house, we didn't have any 18Ks. We had 9Ks. Two, three, 9Ks on the side where he's walking in the beginning of his walk, that room, and then on the other, on the short end of the side, we had a 9K on a tall lift, and then we had five 9Ks. On the bedroom and bathroom side, and those 9Ks were on very tiny man lifts that you couldn't put an operator on it. You had to like aim the lamp. We put it up, and then we had to take it down again and re-aim it and up again because it couldn't take the weight of both. But it was the only way to get there, so that was a little wonky. But then we actually decided to do the night scenes, indoor night scenes, day for night,
mm-hmm.
use the same lights, use that sunlight as moonlight, and instead gel the windows with a really heavy ND, 0.4, so that when you look at the window, you saw sort of a dark, dark, dark blue sky, and there was moonlight that was just like barely exposed coming through. So that way we could like utilize the sets for day or night in the same day, you know. We could just pop in like hard gels.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of a cool solution that fitted us, because we anyway wanted to make it, the nights was nice if they felt more vampire-esque, you know. That was sort of also part of our theme.
Mm-hmm.
To try to nights look more like a vampire, German sort of Nosferatu.
Yes, which, and I see a Nosferatu kind of lensing in there, the original silent one. I'm not talking the newer ones. Yes, I'm talking the real one.
Yeah, that's why we also composed the 133 was sort of that inspiration, the silent movies and the sort of Nosferatu silent movies with a very sort of, it's more expressive compositions too,
yes.
I think, and it's more expressive lighting, but it's also in the same sort of vein as the Baroque painters in terms of, because I think in the silent movie era, they were more painterly with their compositions. And,
yes, very much so.
Yeah, and the same with the Baroque painters, the Renaissance painters, or the Romanticism exteriors, dramatic skies and stuff. ratio kind of thing, but just a lot of headroom or a lot of negative space, and which you can do in any movie, but I feel like the 1:3:3 aspect ratio came from all of that, that we felt that was a better aspect ratio for this film. And it's also like the room had very tall ceilings and walls with, so in order to see the room actually was better in 1:3:3 than in 2:4:0 to see the full height.
Yes, and you really want to get that height because of the majesty of this, and really the history, and then how small the people look. That it really isn't about you people; it's about legacy in the house. What lenses were you using on this one? Because I look at the imagery outside by the pond, the pool, and it's very, very, it's saturated, but there's a beautiful, almost a bouquet at times, and some nice fall off, but I'm curious what lenses you were using.
Yeah, so we shot on, 35, in full silent Super 35 with the Panavision XL2s. And then we used the Panavision Primos, the sort of regular spherical Primos, and I used them on Nutcracker, and I felt the same. I felt like they enhanced sort of they sort of have a contrast and gets things like the colorful images are sort of enhanced a little more somehow with that, compared to if it would have been like a master prime or something. They have more, they have some probably flaws, you would say, that are not perfect, but I think because they were made by Lights in Canada, right? Like, so they had like the glass, so I wonder if there was something in the glass. I don't know if it was like lead glass or something, but it's something in the coating that is different from nowadays, like completely sort of more perfected compositions that would be more sort of multi-coded.
These work so well with this film, Linus, because it's about flaws and human nature. So you want that richness that the natural, unperfected modern day lenses would give you. Just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Now, I have to ask you about shooting that Midsummer Night's Dream party. That is just exquisitely shot. Now, did you shoot that one night for night, or did you do day for night with that?
No, it's night for night, actually, and it was just a little bit challenging because the Emerald came out of that house, and she was like, oh, look at that little building over there, and Susie, production star, was like, yeah, that's amazing, that's where the disco should be, and then suddenly the party set was like, it's much bigger than, I mean, I don't know if you can see in the film that it's that big, but it was really far, you know, like, so I was worried, especially with the limitations we had with lighting, with heavy lifts and stuff, that to get moonlight enough for those things, but we figured out a way to park like four different condors in four corners to have the moonlight, and then Susie and I collaborated on practicals and fires and stuff like that that we could help justify sort of augmented lighting apart from the actual disco. And then when they get off into the maze, that whole thing is like just lit with LEDs from Condors, like kind of stronger LEDs, backlighting generally. In whatever direction you look, we just turn on backlight kind of thing. So it's more like sort of the Nosferatu style on that. But it was in that scene, I think a lot of the pleasure from those scenes lies in the production design, I think, and the costume design too, and with him walking around with antlers and all that. It's like...
That maze, the maze scene is actually breathtaking, just breathtaking, with the backlight going on and off as people are running through the maze itself. Just so exquisitely shot. And especially that whole maze, it fits with the whole idea of corridors and, you know, stairwells and things like that that we've encountered in the house and even in the university. Just exquisite. Curious about camera placement when it comes to extreme close-ups. You don't have a lot of extreme close-ups, but the ones that you do have are very purposeful, such as Oliver looking through a peephole in the wall. And you come right in on the eyeball, and then you hone in on the various parts of the body that he is looking at. You don't do facial close-ups. You do pieces, close-ups of specific things or body parts. And it's so interesting. It's very voyeuristic.
Yeah, that was very important to Emerald. I mean, that was all the time something she felt was important, the voyeuristic theme, him, and how, you know, you watch in secret others, and that it also has a lot of sexual tension in it, where you see sort of body parts, like sweaty body parts or hairy armpits or various things that could be exciting for some and not exciting for others, but it sort of presents it like a gift to the audience,
mm-hmm.
in a way. But yeah, that was definitely a way to also, like, you live in those sort of more painterly compositions, and then you go in on a really detailed close-up of something that was like either or, no properly sort of conventional storytelling with coverage type of photography. Was more like, I guess we thought more of everything as if we wanted to be economical with the storytelling, and like let the audience live in an image as long as it's interesting, and then sort of judge for themselves what the emotions, how you should feel about it, but also like get time to be invested in emotions by not cutting too much. I think a lot of times when you cut a lot, you sort of lose the audience as well. Like, it's kind of nice to live in shots and let the audience really observe for a bit.
And we have quite a few shots. There are quite a few like that. And I do have to mention the beautiful shots you were giving, almost the fly on the ceiling shots, down into the living room when the whole family is there and we see everybody seated and we've got a camera up higher and then coming down to eye level. And it's a beautiful perspective shot.
Remind me again of that angle. Which one?
Going in the living room, and you start up high when the whole family is there, and then you come down, the camera then comes down, and we meet poor dear Pamela on the couch, and we've got Richard Grant's character standing off to the side. Yeah. And it's beautiful the way you've done that, giving us almost a fly on the wall introduction.
Oh, right. Yeah, it was also like a way of, I mean, that whole set, I think, is something that first presents the characters, as you know, like you're in this historical building that's 800 years old or something. The people have lived there forever. And they have completely like painted the walls orange, and it's kind of crazy how that was a lot of like character in that room for Emerald to like describe how these people run their lives. Like, they don't really care. It's an 800-year-old house. They're just painting it fucking orange with watching trashy movies and letting trash lie around, and they would be smoking indoors and not care shit about what this is worth. So that was sort of a really great presentation, I think, of them. And then what I loved was that when later in the film, right, when we're back there and they lost this person, then they're in grief in that room, and they're sitting in the same kind of positions, but now the light is exactly what we talked about before, like,
mm-hmm.
not like bright and colorful. And now it's like really dark and heavy, and most of the image is in shadow, and they're all lit. And then there's a portrait of Felix on the wall, which is also lit. So it's like the whole family is gathered in that room, but in a much more sort of painterly lighting, similar to like those inspirations we had.
Everything, Linus, about this, your work is, as always, exemplary, but this is so visually visceral, what you have done with Saltburn. I absolutely love it. I can't thank you enough for taking time to talk with me today about it. And I hope we talk sooner rather than later and don't wait another 9 years.
Yeah, why didn't we talk on the other film?
I don't know, but we never got to. So we'll have to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Exactly. But thank you so much.
Linus, thank you. And you have a wonderful holiday.
You too. Bye.